I'm here. I'm ready to listen, let my mind go places I didn't realize existed. At the end of this podcast, if it takes your mind anywhere close to where it takes mine, and you feel like sharing or contributing, please go to thecognitiverampage.com and contribute, donate, keep fueling that change.
Welcome to Cognitive Rampage Podcast. Hope you're taking care of you. Hope you're living your cognitive rampage. This is kind of a celebration podcast, really. This is the first time that this cognitive cave has been broke in, if you will, has been smoked in, had been ceremonied in. So we will be live. Look, we're actually getting the stream. Look, everything's looking good. Brother Dave, I think we've done it, sir. Click on the link, follow it, watch us. Take care. I'm going to get to this podcast now. You did a little intro, right?
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, you're like operating like all kinds of things. Now we got music still playing. Anyway, it eventually shut off, people. Oh, man. I love it. I miss my Steve, though, brother, in the podcast. I'm sitting here trying to operate. Like, Steve will be doing all this for us there. Everything's set up now. Welcome, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here. Yeah. In Phoenix.
I couldn't think of a better way, honestly, to have the first guest in the first time in this studio. This studio will probably be another 4 months and then we're out. But the first time in live studio is somebody I've never met.
Right.
Somebody you came connected through somebody else I've never met except online.
Okay.
Right? Philip Martin. Shout out, brother. Love you.
Right.
Came way connected through him, through you, to somebody now in the cave that I've never met. That, for me, is exciting. I couldn't think of a better way.
Doesn't know what I'm going to say.
Right? Don't give a shit, really. No, man. I know if it came by way of Philip Martin, man. I mean, I got much respect for that dude, Cerebral. So he's brought a lot of guests on the show that we've had virtually lately. And shout out to Eric Fox as well. They've been kicking ass. And so when he thought, hey, the guy's in Apache Junction, hey, we're doing a little ceremony this weekend, I went, oh, could be.
Connect, expanding circles. This is good. Now I'm excited to be on. You know, I don't know where we'll go, but we'll go somewhere.
Well, how'd you meet Philip?
I met Philip through another friend, through a friend, through kind of this ceremonial work, right?
Okay, tell me about it. I only heard a little bit about it from Philip, really. But what was that, man?
Well, you know, I mean, I guess there's a lot of circles of this medicine work, right? But the friend who connected us originally through some ayahuasca work in Peru, you know, if you know Amazonian plant medicine of ayahuasca, you know, mm-hmm. We can probably talk about that later a little bit too. It's not my area of expertise, but you know, I use the medicine in that sense a lot too. And then Philip and I got connected through San Pedro ceremonies, Huachuma, some medicine ceremonies that I do. And
tell me about that. What is that?
It's just a traditional cactus medicine. The analog in the United States closest would be like a peyote medicine, you know. But this is from Peru originally, Ecuador, Bolivia, you know, in the Andes there. So a cousin.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. So similar, like, similar, so like a mild work. Psychedelic.
Yeah, yeah. Very mild, you know. Very mild psychedelic, you know. Expansive place to do some medicine work if you. If you know, and I like to do big walks, you know, take them out into desert, preferably. But the best work is, you know, in the mountains of Peru, you know, up in the Andes, hitting the tall lakes, you know, and doing the work up there.
But, I got a friend down there. Shout out to Dan Cleland, and he does a thing with Pulse Tours down there.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, he's been on the podcast, actually. He was talking about it, too. I've always been interested. Myself, never have eaten ayahuasca. Now, mushrooms, my God, I don't even know, right?
Yeah.
I've been in that side of it. I've never really fully crossed over. I even had DMT in my possession for, like, 30 days. I just couldn't bring myself to it.
Minus what's trickling in you or something, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've not gone that far, if you will, or that deep, some would say, but I think enough mushrooms. What's your comparison to a mushroom psychedelic trip versus something like
this? For San Pedro, I think closer to mushroom than ayahuasca, which is, you know, ayahuasca, if you're there, if it's beaming, you know, it's this pineal gland, you know, it's maybe sixth sense, third eye, streaming, if you will, right? So it's a immersive experience, you know, open eyes, and then here's that layer of visions over the eyes, you know, close them again, see them better, etc. So, you know, it's nighttime, you know, 95% of the time, dark and different, you know, where cactus is you know, you can do night ceremony, kind of the traditional peyote, what's called kind of red path, right? You know, saying some prayers to the fire, road man, that sort of thing. That's nice.
Yeah.
But
how long is it essentially effective for? How long is the ceremony?
Ah, geez, 12, 24 hours, you know. It's a nice preparation, you know, if you do it, you know, nice preparation time. Do it, but, you know, we'll go out for 12 hours easily, you know, 12 to 14 out in nature, you know.
Yeah.
For me at all, you know, I think plant medicines like that, mushrooms, you know, should be out in nature.
And
some kind of.
You're at an Apache Junction, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere out there?
Yeah. Deep out into those hills. Yeah, right.
Man, I've been going to Sedona a lot lately for the weekend, just getting up there, right, in Flagstaff, right? Just being mm-hmm. new out west, right? Mm-hmm. So, of course, I'm going where everybody goes.
Yeah.
So. There is something spiritual about certain places, man, and rocks, you know, you're around mountain sizes to where you go, look, I am truly insignificant. And
right.
I can see where that type of environment mixed in. You know, when I first went, I don't know, probably 7 grams deep, which was a little bit actually, but like 2 days before I was on Joe Rogan's podcast.
Okay.
I went deep at the Joshua Tree. That's where I was.
Something kinda, I'm going to do soon, right? Yeah.
Oh, it was just a checkoff, right? Mm-hmm. But there's something about the desert. That was my whole point.
Yeah. No, there is. There is this whole area. You know, I have a medicine man I know, right? And he says, you know, it's an aphorism, right? But, you know, he says, if you're looking for love, you know, you go to the ocean. You know, if you're looking for health, go to the forest. If you want to find yourself, you know, go to the mountains, you know, but if you want to find God, then go to the desert, you know.
And
I think there's some truth there, you know, when you get out there, especially at the 100-degree heat we were battling this last weekend, you know, and you, there's a stillness about it, you know, there's something nice about it, so.
I like the way you put that. There's a stillness to a bunch of fucking rocks.
Right.
10,000 years.
Yeah, a little bit of life here, you know, and then it kind of comes out, and yeah, there's a lot of medicine that happens there, you know. But for me, San Pedro medicine, cactus, is best with the pilgrimage. You know, that aspect of pilgrimaging, of getting up into the mountains or putting a little physical effort into it, too, really kind of pounds it in, you know.
God, I can imagine some of my mushroom trips if somebody asked me to climb
a
mountain.
Right,
I'd be like, look,
right.
I'm going to be laying right here.
Right. But, you know, the medicine gives you some kind of
but that's why you
strength
do
and some energy around that, too, you know. And everything kind of comes alive a little bit, you know, and the mind quiets. And, you know, you can do some good work. You know, a lady recently described it to her. The closest experience was kind of like her Vipassana, you know, sort of a meditative Zen-ish type thing, you know, where you can, you know, go inside, do some work, you know, and...
Well, that's why it's lighter, right? So you said more associated with the mushroom. So if you dose it properly.
You can walk, you can talk, you know, but.
See, it's good to break that stigma because I think so many people are getting aware of ayahuasca, right? That they immediately when they think psychedelics, they think puking 12 hours, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, and I have a friend that you should maybe have on the podcast. I'm pitching him now, right? But he said recently in a talk in Phoenix here that, you know, even ayahuasca medicine traditionally used in the Amazon is a family medicine. You know, there's a stigma in the West, of course, about psychedelics, keep it away from kids. And, you know, we're hiding this aspect of ourselves, you know. But the Shipibo, you know, do it family style. You know, there'll be kids in there sleeping right on the mat next to people, you know. And it's about family and about relations and healing and that kind of work, you know. And so even this work, this cactus work, you know, it's about, yeah, bring the family in and, you know, friends and... You know,
yeah. When I was on a spell for like a year or two, eating with people that were close to me, right? To where I would kind of be like, hey, man, me and you,
right?
This weekend, right? Let's go out and be at the beach or some shit, yeah. And setting it up for more of like a spiritual kind of aspect, right? And there was a few people, you know, I hate getting into stories, right? But there were certain times to where I was like, everyone should experience this at least once in their life.
Yeah, I agree.
On some level.
On
you
some
know?
Level.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're at risk, right, with heart, please don't take this as well.
Yeah, right. There are contradictions. There are spaces where maybe you should not, you know, or.
Yeah.
Or, but still,
if reality
even,
is
but even
grip,
then, in some medical settings, et cetera, you know, it's like, you know, what people are ultimately seeking, I think, is in these kind of experiences, you know, the sense of saying, aha, you know, there is that side of me, or, you know, that's what I've been looking for, right?
Yeah, why? It's funny. Why do you think it's always associated with the idea of looking for something? Like,
right.
I've lost myself looking for something. Where do you think this comes from?
You know, I don't know. You know, but I like you know, I read a lot and listen to a lot of people. You know, but there's an Indian mystic guru named Sadhguru. You know, and I like some of his thoughts. I like the way he puts everything. You know, And what he kind of says, that this fundamental problem, right, is that we're born, all senses look out, you know, we're all five senses, survival first, right, you know. So we look out, and all of our senses look out, and we kind of think that's it, right, you know. And we sort of, since we're not taught about inner dimensions, you know, we kind of go through life looking for what we're seeking out, you know. And everybody's got their out, their thing, their compulsion, where they're trying to find it, right, you know. But the answer, you know, he would put forth, ultimately, it's inside. That's what we're looking for, right? And so when you're in that medicine space and that perspective is wider, you know, and you can do the work inside to heal, you know, you can sort of feel that connection, you know, that spiritual power, if you will. I think that's what people, why they come to it, you know. I think that's what it gives me, you know.
Yeah, I think some people would say, you know, you don't have to use that kind of thing to get to this level. And I would say with the type of influence and the barrage that we face every day from social constructs, influence,
right,
self-hatred, right, the martyrism, everything that we encompass, we're attacked from all angles and we create from all angles.
Right.
The fact that to think that, well, so what if we use a stimulant something, right? Something in the mixture to move us beyond, right?
Yep.
We always make the it's natural argument, correct?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, if you read the classics, you know, don't do it with psychedelics, you know, Rudolf Steiner, How to Know Higher Worlds, you know, do it without, right, you know, but at the same time, it's a different culture, it's a different people, you know, we're so hyper-distracted, you know, and I think the trajectory we're going on is so hyper-external, hyper-wrong way, you know, that I think that's part of the reason why this medicine is finding so much expression, because it's time to kind of, you know, I think
hit the brakes. Yeah,
yeah,
I like, you,
yeah,
started a rampage, you know, there, man. Don't pull back. Don't pull back.
That's it, I think, you know, find this root, you know, and the true sickness, you know, before we do everything faster and more frantic in a very bad way, right?
Yeah, it seems we are always in a hurry to,
yeah,
get to wherever we're going. I've said a few times on the podcast that we're in a hurry to get nowhere. You're in a hurry to get in your car and sit still. You're in a hurry to hurry up and get to the,
yeah,
reservation and sit still.
Yeah.
We're in this constant state of hurry, this urgency that's been built around us, almost like flashing lights. It's like a carnival.
And me, I'm the worst. I'm the busiest. You know, it's always, what am I doing now? What am I doing now? You know, and yeah, I have to try to unwind myself, you know.
Yeah, and so if somebody, especially, you hear a lot of, you know, high-end biohackers with big names like Tim,
yeah,
Ferriss and,
right,
Jason Silva talking about the idea of stretching beyond into the psychedelic, using those experiences,
mm-hmm,
for growth, for motivation, etc. You're seeing that kind of spread on the top level, on the creme de la creme, if you will.
Yeah.
You're seeing that enter in that area, which is, I hopefully, dropping the stigma down on this idea. There's a few groups, you know, MAPS and a new one at Johns Hopkins, you know, that,
yep,
really do great things,
yep,
you know, that help people out. But sometimes it's like the more legislation we create, the slower we allow this to actually help people.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. From, you know, we're missing a big piece of this, you know, but that's it. There's only thought leaders in this right now. You know, this is emerging. And I think for good reason, right?
Yeah, you said it before that we're on such a fast pace, right? We all are in this state of hyper forward.
Yep.
And I think you said it right, that it's almost hyper forward in the wrong direction, that it's needing some sort of serious breaks.
Yeah.
You know, some spiritual breaks,
yeah,
are pumping almost hardcore. You see them, you do. It's a circle back, right? Because if these are ancient, the healing's ancient, how ancient is the forward that we think is modern?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just to go way out there, not way out there, but, you know, the
we
big,
already are, man.
Right,
sorry,
yeah,
about that.
Right.
I softballed that some bitch way out there.
You know, the big perspective sometimes, you know, we're into this age of Aquarius we go, right? You know, this very mind, mental, you know, possibility for utopia, dystopia, right? You know, and we've kind of getting out of this age of faith, maybe. Mm. We're so proud of reason and everything, you know, and
that's the scary part.
That's the scary part, right? Yeah. Because we're not just mind, you know, there's something greater. And if you lose that perspective, you know, and I think that's why it's coming out right now. It's kind of saying, hey, don't forget spirit. Don't forget this other stuff, you know, with your new,
your new thinking gadgets.
Yeah, with your new thinking gadgets. You know, we've thrown out faith. That's good. More people think for themselves than ever, you know, because we've kind of said, hey, you know, I'm going to figure it out myself. That's good. I think that's the space that's allowing some of these medicines to come out, too.
Mm.
You know, we're not under that banner anymore where this is just strictly forbidden, you know. And so now people are saying, hey, actually, you know, there's a lot of healing. There's a lot of growth, you know, here. So,
and then the more we all learn, we know, the more we go, fuck, I don't know anything.
Right, right. And that's the danger, you know. That's kind of where my work is sometimes, you know. It's around this idea that you know, the bad confusions around some of the trends we see. You know, my big three are kind of nuclear radiation, genetic engineering, and sort of this transhumanism, artificial intelligence meme, and some of the philosophical underpinnings, you know, that that are under that. You know, there's no regard in some of this for this greater, more integral perspective, you know, and marching forward on some of those trajectories, you know. I mean,
that's scary shit, man.
Yeah, it is.
That's scary shit, you know, to thinking that we're a skip in the evolutionary chain. We're the monkey in the middle, if you will,
yeah,
onto some thing we can't even imagine. You know, I wonder if the Neanderthal imagined us, right?
Right.
Doing what we're doing, yeah, and how short that span really is when you look at the time frame of everything,
mm-hmm,
or even the potential of it. And we do feel like we're moving so fast, but, you know, we are like this barely a fucking blip on the whole existence.
Yeah.
And I do feel like we are almost genetically, definitely environmentally, evolutionary influenced to drive forward, to find the patterns, to figure it out, to keep opening it up, you know. But I wonder how much is really, what's that Russian doll stuff, right, where it's formed?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, how much of it becomes that?
Yeah. And I think that's the root problem, right? In these things, it's this idea that because you can do the something, that you know the something, you know, that because we can do something, you know, we think, oh, we know it, you know, so now we can do anything with it, right? And that's a kind of a logic issue, you know. It's like riding a bike isn't knowing the thing and all the stuff that goes around it, you know, and so, yeah.
Nuclear weapons.
Yeah, oh, look exactly. What we can make. Look, hey, I can split an atom. I can insert genes. I can CRISPR it now, right? I can modify humans if I want to, right? You know, I can put my brain into a computer, you know. It's like, because we can, we think we can maybe, right? It's like,
we're like toddlers in the kitchen with, yeah, all open drawers.
Yeah, it doesn't mean we know what mind is or what consciousness is or what DNA is at all, you know, and yet here we go, you know.
Right.
Right.
More creations, more inventions, right? Technology, demon is forward. I'm doing a talk Friday night, like a live Facebook thing, and I did a post asking what your biggest fear is, right?
Mm.
And it seems, I got to ask that question randomly too, like a dinner.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming, but kind of knew it was coming. It was an in-depth conversation that evening in Sedona in the hills.
Okay, right, yeah. What's the fear, right?
Yeah, yeah. We went from fear to joy to happiness, right? A lot of subjective states. And it was a good conversation all in all. But it made me think. That's why I posted that on the Tribe of Change. Like, you know, what's your biggest fear?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, as we've talked about, chasing competence, you know, chasing the experience, trying to learn everything about nothing, to learn that we know nothing at the end. I'm starting to kind of think that it's really contentment, and that the more we chase anything, the more distance we get from contentment. But I understand that there's a fine, yeah, line between contentment and complacency.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's, no, it's such this fucking...
Yeah, well, and contentment, you know, contentment, happiness, bliss, or, you know, or some of that moment stuff. I think that's the duality, right, is that, you know, as we try to label it and understand it and dig into it, we categorize the very left brain activity of even turning it into language in the first place, right? And, like, yeah, what are we talking about? We get lost in the words themselves, even when words just describe a huge range of phenomenon, you know. It's this sort of, and then, but, you know, I've heard it said recently, it's sort of the dead world, you know. I mean, it's abstract, you know, you're just, it's in the words, it's in these things, you know, and that life is really in the integral aspect, the moment, you know, in this, this other way of looking at it, you know. And so you can't find it over here just digging through words and concepts and recycling it, you know. You can't find the point there. You need to kind of do this sort of thing, right?
Not think.
If that makes sense, this sort of thing.
It's funny. Right? It's a crazy path I'm learning, that you have to first think for yourself, learn to think,
right,
and then realize,
right,
when you're stop thinking, and,
right,
and then,
right,
you know, feel a little bit more, right? Instead of, because we know what we think creates what we feel, but once we get into that level of it, we can't, I don't know, for me, the rational sometimes does come off as pessimistic and negative, right?
Well,
so,
yeah,
to,
yeah,
move,
well,
beyond that, then,
see, it's got to be, in a sense, right? I mean, that's its function, you know, just to kind of brutally look at it, right, you know, but if that becomes your worldview, you know, then that's very wrong. You know, I think that's a bad trajectory, you know, total rational reason, you know. I mean, who said that reason, you offended reason, you know. What was that? Reason's more and more important than emotion or spirit or any of the other aspects, right? You know, it's just reason, you know. Well,
all right, our idea to reason.
Right, and I think, you know, that's part of the help the medicine work, you know, just create a little bit more of that space between that thinking identified self, you know, that they can kind of run around in more space, less thinking, you know, and more sort of here I am in the moment, you know, pulling what I need. And
I think some of it, I remember some of my first experiences, it's really about letting go. So for those of you, such as myself experienced early, as happen to be control freaks, the initial hour or two is I was, remember my first, early eats, and found myself really in a battle with myself of letting go of going, no, I want to think about this. No, you're not. You can't. It's over here. And that fight within yourself really became like the first barrier I felt like I had to first even be aware was taking place.
Yep.
You know, that argument of, I got this, I can control, I'm not dying. You're really not dying.
Yeah.
To where you eventually just go, fuck it. just take it. Just, you know, that, I think that's the first, you know, kind of awareness, you know, barrier, maybe.
Yeah, watch yourself thinking, you know, try to, you know, I think the medicine, I mean, a lot of people talk about peyote ceremonies being like that, you know, and I don't have a lot of experience with peyote work, you know, but what limited I do, it was like that in a sense, you know, when your thoughts went off running like this down whatever normal rut track they do, you know, playing whatever loop, you know, you've sort of constructed, right? You know, you might get sick, physically sick, you know, and be like, ugh. It was only when you sort of crossed out those thoughts that you'd feel a little bit better, you know? And so there's like that aspect almost, like some intelligence that's doing some work, right?
Yeah, either it's a level we don't understand or a level that's tapped into something we don't understand. And frankly, I love the support of science, right? But I love how they say, if you can't see it, hear it, it's not there. But there's a lot of those that we keep discovering that if you can't see
it. Well, that's it. I mean, science, if we're all honest about it, it's just a method, you know, of getting to truth, you know. And then the problem is that if you say that we can only talk about objective things, you know, that we can both agree on and measure, well, that's the domain of what you can say anything about, you know, and it's sort of like to extrapolate from that world and say, well, now there's nothing else out there. You actually can't do, right? Because we're only talking about objective here, and yet there's all this subjective experience. There's this inner work, you know, because you can't measure it doesn't mean it's not real, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. But that's what I think slows anything good that becomes natural, really, into everyday lives or everyday homes, is that, well, we can only build off, like you said, mm-hmm. objectively mm-hmm. what we know. So once we know this for sure, and we got to retest that 1,000 times, then we got to see if this or this can happen, right? Rather than trying to, you know, help. I wonder if research that got put into the other side as much as got into proving it wasn't.
Right.
Could pull, you know, from both angles. It's really try to figure it out. I like that definition of science is really just the looking for the truth, right? Studying for what we know. Without coming in with that bias, right? Of this is what we believe to be true.
Know what you know, and what you don't know, you can't say anything about. Then you have to be honest about that. You know, that happens a lot too. You know, it's this. I won't even get into it. We'll get into it later. I know when I talk about some of the other stuff, right? But
doesn't matter, man.
But that's it. You know, I think that's the benefit of medicine. You know, I think that's why it's coming out in Silicon Valley. You know, some of the tech entrepreneur. You know, sort of. These communities a lot, you know, who are doing a lot of work and a lot of innovative work and finding ways to, you know.
I wonder if it knows, like, if you're using it for bad, right? If you're like, all right, I'm bringing this in so my company can make $200 million next year and starve another couple tribes out. And come on, give me a vision, right?
And you could take it in like that and find out that it changes you, you know, just by bringing it in, you know, right?
Right, that's like, how I'm saying.
Right? I'm good, right? Or whatever.
I think most of our leaders have already done so. I think we call that like the metaphoric deal with the devil, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's obviously some urgency in certain places in the world, and I believe, you know, it's a belief of mine that medicine's here to, you know, help us make this transition, you know, whatever we're sort of figuring out and overcoming, you know, this is part of it.
Yeah, that's why I said it's an experience. I think most people, if you can, health-wise, all check, you know, set and setting, do it safely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's partly what I forgot to say. When I was eating with friends, I would always say, look, find the place that you love most, that you feel most comfortable.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And, you know, if we didn't know each other well, I'd be like, hey, have the person you love most there.
Yep.
You know, they don't have to eat with you or anything, just have them there. And that's about as far as I would go. And they're like, all right, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
And I think... I was starting to learn that whatever you go in for, if you want the rave, the party, the festival, whatever, it kind of gives you that, right? Whatever you're going for kind of gives you that angle.
Yeah, there's a big intention obviously, you know, I think setting a space with your intention, you know, for me, I set it with some prayers and, the kind of work we want to do, you know, around that level. And I think mushrooms, at least in my experience, you know, which is somewhat limited, are different in that sense. You know, we use ayahuasca for a party or a rave, you know, it just wouldn't go well, right? You know?
Oh, my God, no.
And then, you know, they take cactus and they take out mescaline, you know, and they do it like that. But mescaline's not cactus, you know, it's just one alkaloid in there. And there's this other thing going on, you know, and the right setting is important, you know. And
yeah, for me, that's why the jungle for me, I was like, no, I'm good. I'm like, look, I'm going to be sitting there freaking out as it is. And then I'm going to be thinking, look, man, Medvac is like 2 days. Oh, man, my mind is always so trying to take over all the time. If I got too deep in, I'm like, I'm in the fucking jungle.
It'd be good. It's good. It's good to do.
Yeah, you know? I'll just go get lost in the woods in the desert for a little while.
But in general, I'm the same. You know, the jungle is my environment where I'm least comfortable, you know. I don't like humidity, too much heat, and then I can't walk around. I get a little creeped out, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But not just black panthers that'll eat you. I got to know everybody.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I think if, you know, personal tours like that, that I think is kind of cool. If you get to know somebody for a little while, or if you come in with somebody, you know, both kind of seeking something on some kind of level, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, I have found it hard. I'm currently where I'm like the minefield that I'm in right now, the chessboard that which my mind is in now, is trying to recognize more of the idea of not chasing anything, of not out to chase success, happiness, pick a subjective adjective based on some emotional moment. Any one of those, rather than doing something like that, is really going, being in the now to find the contentment consistently, right? Not as a reminder to when it gets tough. Because I think if we have a belief of an expectation that, well, life will get tough, but just remember to be in the present, well, then you stay on the same roller coaster of going, oh, it's tough, I'll just remember. Yeah. Oh, it's tough. And rather than do that, is really be in the now and just reconstruct the now as many times as possible. I've realized, if you ever tried to talk in just the present tense, not past or future, how many words you don't say.
Yeah, right.
It's pretty crazy. You end up, like, not saying a fucking thing. It'll be, like, two sentences. You're like, damn, that really meant something.
Yeah, I think that's good, you know. For me, I could learn a lot of that, you know. Resting, contentment, you know. But, you know, I'm busy, and I have a lot of projects going all the time, you know. But what I like is ceremony gives me a space to slow down, you know. There's a diet, I slow down, I sort of focus in, I do that work, you know, and then for me it's about finding time, more and more time, just to be still, just to be in the moment, you know.
I find that still hard for me sometimes.
It is.
When I'm on the grind, really pushing, like finishing up the end of the book, right, I was practicing every little thing you can think of, and still trying to find that stillness to everything that was going on, I think becomes a challenge, especially if you believe it to be. It's kind of what I would say.
Yep.
But I remember struggling just when there's so much was going on and changes you don't control.
Yep.
I think really sets off a lot of people is an irrational idea that perhaps I can control whatever my biggest fear is.
Yep.
I mean, that's kind of what that post was about, was at that table when every man and woman at the table expressed what their biggest fear was, I kind of extracted from all of it and was like, it's fucking crazy. Everyone's biggest fear is something that they thoroughly do not control at all.
Right.
And that everybody seems to be that. And understanding that rational difference of going, fuck, I don't even control that. But yet that fear still controls us.
Yep. Yeah, that's it, right? I mean, what's your thing? What's your fear so much? You know, I think medicine does a good job there, you know, for a lot of people, you know, and some fears and some traumas are hidden, you know, they're sort of buried down below too. You know, we might have a surface one. We're like, well, that's what I'm afraid of, you know, but then you do the work, you start digging in, you know, there's no, you know, when I was younger, I thought, oh, I'm going to go down there. I'm going to have my enlightenment. I'll figure it all out, you know, and now that I'm older and wiser, you know, I know now that it's just, you know, it's just, like you said, those Russian dolls, you know, we're just kind of digging down and then we find harmony, I think is probably the best description of what medicine work tries to do, right? Is sort of harmonize the aspects of the self, you know, if it's crazy mind or if it's out of whack emotions, you know, or if it's just no spiritual connection, you know, you're missing that direct source of what you need, you know.
Yeah, that's where a lot of people tend to pull up, right? Is when you start saying, you know, connected to something, right?
Yeah.
This is where they start pulling up.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain, really, unless you're in that moment, right? I share it with nature a lot. I had one the other day coming home, kind of randomly, right? But then when you, it's still, even then I notice, cause even when I'm feeling like that, mm-hmm. I try to think, what am I thinking? Trying to observe it all. I'm like, I feel like I'm taking notes in the background of my own head, right? How crazy does that make me?
Right. Yeah. That's good.
You thought this, you thought this.
Watching your own patient in there, you know, what's he talking about again? You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I have a little one of those, you know, and they write really quickly. And I felt thoughts that I allowed to keep manifesting and an idea of feeling connected with things. And there's a fear that immediately jumps up that, shit, it's this first kind of, holy, wait a minute, I am kind of connected to this or that, without recognizing false patterns either, right?
Yeah.
But just feeling.
Yeah.
But it means you're like 35th on the place list, right, of importance. And at the moment, sometimes you're like less than that mm-hmm. of any kind of order. But I think it's matching that, right, where the fear comes in and where the subjective belief comes in.
Yep.
Where that matches, like the crossroad of that shit.
Yeah. I mean, then that's why, you know, for me, every medicine ceremony, there's a moment within it that I remember today as clear as the day. It's not like a normal memory that's sort of more clouded by emotion and it's been reconstructed a few times. This is a medicine ceremony memory, and it's like, it's timeless in a sense for me, you know, and there's almost a moment from everyone where I can remember one moment, you know. And if I can do it when I'm doing some real deep digging, you know, like, you know, whatever, you know, my kind of digging work in the spirit, you know, and then, you know, I have that there for the fears, you know, and I think a lot of people do, you know, and then it comes down, it's like, that's right, you know, the more we sort of resonate there, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's like big accomplishments, big achievements, you know, births, deaths in the family, things that really hit there. Medicine ceremony work does that for me. It's sort of like, you know, if I'm in a rough time, I can go to that moment and go, that's right. You know, I mean, I'm just like.
You would mark them on your timeline.
Right. Yeah. In a sense.
It would be something I incorporated. Like, all right, here's a marking of a timeline.
Right.
Yeah. I think we.
Connect me to this greater expansiveness of myself, you know, the greater journey. And so, you know, I don't think so locally sometimes. I mean, that's what fear makes you do, right? Kind of shrink down and think very locally. That's that survival basis, you know, like what's my immediate thing, you know, et cetera. But being expansive, you know, and just seeing the bigger picture, you know, that's what it helps me with at least.
Yeah, I think that's anything
for me. I'm just not talking too many abstract words here, you know.
No, we both are.
Awesome.
We're riding that abstract.
Yeah, we're off talking subjective. That's fair, you know.
I would say everything's questionable, right? But I think that's kind of the superpower many, I think, deny themselves that they really possess, is that idea that it goes goes deeper than just saying it, right? It's deeper than just going, no, it's better than this because I get better, right? We can say that, but it's still hard to really feel, you know, I'm just saying it. But deeper beneath what that belief comes from, you know, like I'll never be happy unless, or other people are out to get me, right?
Yep.
We tend to forget to question ourselves. And shit, we got to be so tough, really, in the way today's set up emotionally. It's no longer worrying about like getting some, I don't know, well, it's diseases still, but getting your leg chopped off or getting shot randomly. It's surviving the mental hell. It's surviving that emotional attack on all of your psyche from so many directions.
It's harder than just the physical survival, right? Which is almost, you know, at least you're in the moment, you just know what to do, right? This sort of chronic stress of life, you know, and rugged pace. And, you know, that I know because I fall into it all the time. You know, I get back into the hustle bustle and, you know, my same old patterns come out again, my same old fears. And I find myself doing the same things. And then I'm like, oh man, you know, I need to go do some medicine work. You know, it kind of pops me out of it a little bit. You know, I mean, no matter how many times I think I go, it's easy to get lost in the bustle, right? We're so much to do. You know, I have a kid and there's this and regular work and service work, growth work, personal work, you know, relationship, you know, I mean, it's just so much work, right?
Right.
Dreams and hopes, right? You know, that we get lost, you know, so it helps from that perspective, just bring me home, you know, if you will, center me.
Yeah, I was talking the other day, if someone tried to implement every single biohack, book, routine, structure from every person out there saying like this, what would that person's day really look like?
Yeah.
I love how you said body work, brain work, head work.
Right, right.
You do see that language popping up, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. God, it does sell t-shirts though, right? That's what a lot of people are pushing. Their program or their t-shirt, but I think it's so much of the individual.
That's it, you know?
But I think that's also with psychedelics in any form, really. The cactus work, you know, mushroom work, there's all kinds of certain work being done. I've seen it be highly effective on veterans over time, personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for that not to be in full access to people for healing. That for me becomes the real issue, right? I get upset about that because the things that we do allow to be in people's mouths every yep. other night, 16 prescriptions, you know, yep. as we drop these things off. And then on this side, there's at least a shot, you know, a roll of the dice as much as what the fuck they're creating is. That's where I really start to get upset is how, you know, it's still held secret almost.
Yeah. I mean, we're getting there, though, because some of the data, the evidence is just becoming insurmountable. You know, the work on ayahuasca with, you know, not just PTSD or sort of these things, but addictions, you know, hardcore opiate and those sorts of addictions. And same for Ibogaine or Iboga work in Canada for heroin. You know, I mean, the success rates are astounding, you know, again, because if we can address the root, you know, inside, then the compulsion, why we're going out, what we're trying to fill, you know, it's this hungry ghosts meme, you know, from sort of Buddhist thought, right? Just filling something up when all of a sudden we have this altered state, this expanded state experience, you know. We might go back and see some trauma from our youth and see it from the other person's perspective, you know. We might see something, you know, that just helps us put us together a little bit, you know. And all of a sudden that drops away, and then, you know, and then my friend Joe Tafur, who you have to have on, you know, because he's the medical doctor who talks about, you know, how this work integrates with, you know, with what we know physiologically, you know, in medical profession, you know, and he just released a book, and that's it, you know, I mean.
Joe Tafur, right?
Yeah, Tafur.
Tafur, all right, Joe Tafur. Yeah, we linked up on social media.
Oh, that's good.
I think he may be coming on.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got a lot to good, you know, but it, you know, this, the proof, you know, for the science-minded people, you know, in some cases that emotions, spirit, mind, body are really connected, you know, and that doctors are great for acute trauma, you know, sort of related things, you know, if you need a, you know, if you need antibiotic, you know, get one, right, you know. But if it's chronic,
mechanics.
If it's sort of lifestyle, if it's emotional, if it's all these other things that cause a ton of physical issues, it's like psychedelic plant medicine, you know, has its ways, right?
Yeah, and it should not be treated, you know, the way it is. It should be open to everybody. I think the more science, and because they're always, everyone seems to put a stake in the ground, right? They put up a flag. They were doing that in mental health to where, like, I'm a behavioralist, you know, I'm a cognitive practitioner.
Yeah, it's a word problem. It's words.
Yeah, and everyone would claim this whole, and then it would be more research and papers really proving their stance on why it's this. And, you know, you see crossovers in behavioral and cognitive some.
Yeah.
But there's so much more influence, and that's kind of what I wrote about, was saying, like, look, there's so much out there that even if you can take a little bit from each of these and kind of influence all of it, you know, the more I think departments, if you will, or fields become blurred lines and we cross those. Hey, what do you guys know over there about that? The more we share that more, I think we expand faster.
Generalism, I think, is the way to go. The integration side, you know, I think is where we need to go instead of super specializing more and more and more, you know. It's and that's the work I see, you know. People integrating all this stuff, right? Business, biohacking, you know, psychedelics, healing, you know, doctor stuff, natural health, everything, you know, it's kind of, you know, this is how we do it. You know, we're learning finally, right?
Yeah, I like that. That's
different,
a good
kind of medicines, you know. There is a monopoly, a hold on what medicine is, you know, and these words, it's all this tyranny of words stuff, right? I mean, drugs is the bad one, right? And that's it. You know, out goes all this healing stuff that cures addiction to drugs, you know, hardcore drugs. And yet, because you called them drugs, you throw them out too, you know, and not understanding psychedelic medicine in its traditional contextual sense, not understanding the value of this, you know, and we've lost it, you know.
Yeah, well, it doesn't necessarily get Pell grants and loans and funding, right?
No.
You write psychedelic research on your funding group, it's probably going to get denied.
A cup of cactus costs $10, you know, and you can do a lot of work, you know. And
yeah, right. That's it. We just $10 for a little cactus, or right, for the rest of your life, sign up now, and if you have Medicare Part D, it'll cover most of your prescriptions for the rest of your fucking life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's worth the shot, right? Like, how couldn't you even go, you know, even if you were a non-believer in any of that whatsoever, I mean, you know what? I'd tell you, roll the fucking dice, but it's not medical advice at all coming from me. I'm just shooting the shit. But the way I see it, you know, I'm like, you know, you don't die. Roll the dice, right?
Yeah, and even, you know, there's a lot of promising work being done on patient end of life with psychedelics too, you know, to help with fear, you know, based around the dying process, you know. A lot of these spiritual systems, you know, it's about learning to die well or something, or at least not having the fear of it, you know, because you have that greater perspective, right? And so a lot of people who go in and use the mushroom, for example, there's work that's been done there around terminal patients who, yeah. Extremely beneficial, you know, just to give them that perspective, some of that healing before they pass, you know. So there's all aspects of this medicine in our life, I think, you know. I'm going out with a couple peyote buttons in my mouth, you know. I'm walking out in the desert, though.
Do you have that written in a will, sir?
Right, yeah, that's right, yeah.
It must be announced to an attorney.
My wife knows, yeah.
Well, we need an attorney. It's got to be a legal drug, and therefore, God, man, I think that's... it's hard to even look at that, right? I can hear somebody listening now going, oh, why would you assist with it? You want to have them fight and hold on, right? But how much of that is selfish, right?
Well, you know, everybody's going to expire, you know? And, yeah, there's times to hold on, and then there's times to, I think, you know, die gracefully. And
that's such
die
a
die with
fine
dignity,
line.
You know? I mean, why can't we die with dignity? Right. Wild animals do, you know? And you see one's fought to the hell and then gets it, and it's like, yeah, you know, good job. I mean, you know, you did well. Right. But we're all going to the earth, you know? We're all going to dust, right?
Yeah, that's for some people, I can hear it hit on just its morbid form anyway.
Yeah.
But if you've experienced that, for me, I don't know. I don't know if I'm at the end of life right there, and that's the way I want to go out. I'd have to think about that. I think it should be open to anybody. Again,
right.
I'm not dying anything terminal.
Well, no, I mean, this isn't, you know, give them some psychedelics as they're dying, you know, either. This is just... You know,
I get it.
Yeah.
We're not hitting them with 7-10 grams going, see you later, sister.
Yeah, howdy, buddy. Yeah.
Woo! I'm sorry. We probably shouldn't have that shit.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get emails.
Yeah.
No, but, I mean, shit. Whatever. I think anybody should be able to choose whatever it is. You know, I'm a firm believer in whatever works for you. You know, I'm trying not to be anti-anything.
Yeah.
Only anti-this is the only way thing.
Yeah. And that's, you know, a big hero of mine is Graham Hancock, you know, and this... You know, war on consciousness is his big thing he's always fought, right? And I think that's what this is, in a sense, war on what I can do with my own mind, you know, in the privacy of my own home, 4,000-year-old plant medicine that you know, everybody's had a history of safe use and studies showing, you know, beneficial benefits to society and people and health and wellness. And
well, you start
we
to
need
see
to get
the,
there, you know.
The logic starts to expose the tyranny.
It does, yeah.
After it a does. While, it does. And then, like we said, though, once the logic then reaches its peak of what it can explain, then we have to then come off the logical and be able to open up spiritually. Like, it's such a fucking what the hell.
Right.
Yeah. That,
right.
Oh.
There's work to be done, you know. That's what I'm doing. There's work to be done. Right? That's what you're doing. So this is good.
Always digging and chasing, getting faster, trying to expand on certain any aspect. Right. I mean, if we really have the idea, and I'm speaking probably against a few people's spiritual beliefs, but if we argue for the conscience right now, the conscious place, the there is no truth, that if we can create that truth based on any perception we want to, like that seriously is some comic book superhero shit. If they, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
Most people would argue, you can see the hard, you know, religious people would argue that there is truth in the world and it's coming, it's written.
Yeah.
I get it. I'm not saying no to that either. Right. Because for as much... I don't want to fight that one either.
Yeah.
Right? But trying to be in the present and being now and willing to do that, that's fucking hard, man.
Yeah, I think there's a balance of them in a sense. You know, I believe in sort of truths, you know, sort of divine truths or, you know, just ways that life operates and whatever, from the cycles to the laws to these things, right? But yeah, it gets messier when people get involved, right?
Oh, man, you never know what we're perceiving, right?
Right?
At the end of anything.
I think that's part of it. I mean, that's part of, I think, the purpose, you know, ultimately in the cosmic design of what a human is, right? You know, sort of scrying towards some understanding by, you know, kind of bumbling around a little bit and trying to figure it out and knocking up against doors. You know, I think that is our purpose, you know.
Ah.
Some sense, right? You know?
I dig it. Well,
that's what we love to do, you know, grow and expand and figure it out and try to open it up, you know, but sort of... without knowing maybe what our full nature is either, you know, like I call it sometimes cosmic dousing, you know, like dousing is kind of like, you know, it's this old technique, right? You're trying to put like a question to your subconscious mind, you know, and, you know, so they use pendulums back in the day. There's water stick guys out here, you know, that find water with the sticks and, but it's kind of like making a piece of yourself unaware of what you know and then finding the answer that way, sort of in sort of this intuitive, creating space like we were talking about earlier, right? You know, and so sometimes I joke that it's kind of what we are, you know, like God's little entities, right, that think we're alone and separate and we're all confused, but, you know, really, you know, that's what we're doing for them. We're the unaware, if you will, you know.
I may date myself or whatever, but do you remember those old football, you set up the plastic guys, you turn on, it just vibrates. Some of the football guys go this way. That's what we're kind of like. We're on God's, like, vibrating football. I forgot what they call that. My brother and I used to play that all the time. But we're just kind of, the vibration's going, and whatever vibe you choose to ride, man, that's where you're going.
Like a big cosmic Van de Graaff generator, you know, this big ball in the middle of potential, you know, and then consciousness puts its little finger to the glass and it dances around in its own unique form. As long as you hold it then and you let it go, it's kind of, you know, at least, you know, I'm just playing around with.
I thought you were going to go into freestyle or something. Right. That was beautiful. I was like, shit, you were riding out with some cosmic. That was like a Sarah Schumer rampage,
you know,
right
back
there.
We go, right, you know, and.
So what are you working on directly now, man? What's the you say you're busy a lot? So walk me down some of what you're doing, man.
All right. So, you know, I mean, my my core profession, you know, what I've done for most of my life is engineer, kind of an R&D development manager type, right?
You're those chess players. You see logic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I worked on pyrotechnic devices, right? Anything that explodes, a lot of hot gas.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys, right?
And I let you in the building.
Yeah, I'm in the house. You know, you don't know me, right?
Some secret military agent guy named Philip Martin hooked me up with you.
Right, yeah.
Now my house is going to blow up. All right. Philip Martin's probably not even real.
Right, yeah, right. It's just, he's me.
Oh, shit. It's getting all 007 up in this bitch, man. Just don't rip your face off, man.
But that's where I've been. You know, originally airbag inflators, you know. And everything that makes an airbag inflator go is where I started, but I've worked in everything now.
How the hell did you get into explosives, man?
You know, because my background's, I'm a math major, applied physics. And so I kind of interned there for a lot of years. I went right to industry.
I love how you intern in the mathematics and physics.
Interned in the pyro device world, you know, working.
How did you cross over? I'd love how you just, I was in math, so I got into bombs.
Well, you know, there's some family connections. You know, I think I watched my first airbag inflator go off when I was 8 or something, right, you know, so... So some lucky connections kind of got me into there.
Great. I got to connect the guy who's into explosives since he was 8 years old.
Right, right.
Shit, man.
Yeah,
all right.
Come on.
If you know what happens to me, I'm in Peoria. There's deserts and shit. Oh, man.
Safety devices, you know.
Safety
so I've
first.
Worked in a lot of industries around that, you know, and yet 8 years ago I started my own business called Synergy Energy Systems.
That tripped me out when I saw your email.
The name
of the company I just dissolved that was in the background of all this was Full Synergy Group.
Is that right?
Yeah, like 6 years, man.
See, I came back from Peru with the name. I should have done more research because Synergy is a popular name, you know. But I love it. You know, it's my hobby business.
I had to add Full Synergy.
Full Synergy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Synergy Energy Systems. You know, I did biogas for a little bit, trying to turn manure into methane, that sort of thing.
How far did you get there? Where's that at?
You know, up in Michigan, I worked with a couple horse barns. Never did any constructed things. You know, I did some designs. And then the way it worked, I ended up getting involved with a friend.
Yeah.
We did rainwater harvesting.
Damn.
A business called Rain Reserve for a while. It was his, and I kind of jumped on to help a little bit. And that's still around, you know, rainreserve.com. Basically, harvesting rainwater, you know. So it was a... we had a manufacturing facility in Missouri punching out diverters and different pieces to make rain barrels into rain barrels and to take it off the gutter and sort of a full suite around how do you rainwater harvest, right? And so I did that, you know, but, you know, forever the way to make the money was in the industry, you know. So for the last 8 years, I've been kind of halftime, if you will. And then
what's in the inventor's basement? I know you got something.
No.
What's the masterpiece that no one's allowed in the room to see?
You know, 10 more years, right? No.
What is it, man? What's your Iron Man suit?
No. Actually, what I'm working on right now is writing. So, you know, my current profession is really an author, you know, and like I said before,
what's the book?
Living with Radiation. Website's livingwithradiation.com. You know, I have a lot I want to write about, you know, and so I started with, it's called A Nuclear World, Heal and Protect. And it's a small guide. It's about nuclear radiation, ionizing radiation, how to heal and protect. You know, this is Fukushima-related stuff, right?
How far is it really in the oceans?
Well, it's in California, you know.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, man.
Of course.
Don't fuck with me.
Of course. But again, you know, and so I try to work through it in the book a little bit, you know, because...
Okay.
I have some, there's some bad ideas out there about nuclear energy. So part of it's kind of like a kind of a new voice for this generation that may have kind of forgotten the old generation's sort of nuclear advocacy and why we really need to keep our foot on nuclear weapons. Yes, nuclear energy and nuclear waste, you know, especially.
Yeah. Are you pro for? I don't even know. Is this
no?
A thing?
I mean, I guess at this point,
I don't want to make it a thing, though.
No, it's not a thing. You know, right, I mean, God. You know, if my choice, I'd say don't split it 50 years ago, but we did. And now we're here. And so we have to be good at it now. Now we have to be really good at it, and we have to get better at it, because now we've created something that we don't know the way out of, right? All this waste, all this 10,000, 100,000
years
stuff.
Like the movie Outbreak, right? We've got the damn disease now.
Right,
that we
see, we could do it, but we didn't really understand it. Now we're here. Now you have to go forward. But, you know, so I'm sort of sick of stupid nuclear, you know? And
okay.
So part of that's in the book. And then what's happened, I think, is because of our kind of our focus on climate change, on carbon, nuclear is kind of coming out as the new energy for the greenies as well. And
didn't some kid do something with nuclear waste to make some battery?
I don't know.
They invented some way that I hope they can scale it, but it was
just so much.
It was something using nuclear waste to create some sort of battery that lasts forever. Something
that's what
like
we
that.
Need more of, you know. So that's it. I think, you know, to get out of nuclear, you have to go forward. You have to progress, you know, beyond it, you know, to the next energy source. But you have to figure out how to deal with what we have, you know. So I talk a little bit about that. I talk about some issues with the way we look at how it affects our health. You know, there's a lot of bad arguments out there.
Does it cover like things like 4G, 5G being?
Well,
like
so that's kind of the second part of the project, you know.
Oh,
and
sweet.
So there's kind of two books. The first one I called A Nuclear World, and the second one, that one's out. Second one was called A Wireless World.
Oh, where can they get Nuclear World?
Livingwithradiation.com. It's on Amazon as a Kindle format as well.
Perfect. Yeah, guys, go get that shit. I'm going to get it now.
I got a copy for you.
Oh, wonderful, man.
Don't worry.
Just put it on camera, man, if you got it.
Oh, it's over my bag. I'll get it in a little bit.
Oh, all right. But keep going then. So
you know, the second part of the project's about wireless radiation, right? Kind of the non-ionizing spectrum and really about things that affect people there, the Wi-Fi, all the questions around that. Same thing, heal and protect, you know. What's the threat? What's the real threat? What's the data say? And how do we protect, you know, how should we live better with some of these things? And
the first one is on nuclear though.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
With something we covered and touched on some of the basic arguments, right? In fours.
Well,
and pluses,
I mean,
right?
You know, I'd say the main point I tried to distill out of the book is that you see a lot of bad arguments out there. I mean, I've seen arguments out there in Bloomberg, you know, in editorials saying, you know, we shouldn't have evacuated the Fukushima residents. It's kind of a crime to move them because the radioisotopes that were littered there really aren't that harmful, you know, and this is why. And one of the things a lot of people point to is this chart called Sources of Ionizing Radiation, you know, and it's one of those semantics problems, you know, because we look at radiation as just energy that moves through space, you know, in some form. So throw out like acoustic and thermal radiation, and then we're talking electromagnetic radiation or atomic particle radiation primarily, right? And then we split it up into two categories, ionizing, which is stuff that's strong enough to knock electrons out of atoms and ionize the atom,
mm-hmm.
And then non-ionizing, you know, radio waves and microwaves and terahertz waves and sort of that whole spectrum, you know? And so one of the things they do on the ionizing is then we look at all the sources, you know? And so there's, you know, there's cosmic radiation, you know, we have medical scans, external radiation, you know? And then if you look at that and the way we calculate it, then they say, hey, nuclear fallout is really like 0.1% of the total. So it's not that bad, you know. Look at how small it is and this all your sources. And one of the things I try to tease out is that we can't look at it like that because the biggest threat for us is nuclear radiation specifically inside our bodies, you know. And they sort of measure that radiation wrong.
So that 1% of the nuclear infection, really, because it's so powerful, is like having a concentrated version.
That's
if
right.
You will.
It is. That's what it is. Especially when you know you take these large atoms like uranium and thorium, right, and you split them. Well, what you get in the middle is you get smaller, very radioactive chunks. You know, that are more closer to things that our body needs, like calcium and potassium. You know, so this is where you get strontium and you get cesium and you get radioactive iodine, right? Stuff that the body's actually thirsty for. The body's not very thirsty for uranium and doesn't have much use for it, right? Doesn't.
Right.
So, you know, if you're drinking it in your water, most of it just goes right out of you, 99% plus. Just, you know, right out a couple days transit, you know. And then most of the radiation sources we're getting come from the outside. Well, we're adapted for radiation from the outside, you know. And
okay.
We've got a lot of, you know, I think it's said that from cosmic radiation, every cell in the body, about 40 trillion cells, gets hit once a year. Which sounds like a lot, but every cell can repair itself, you know, and that
right.
we're always breaking DNA strands. The body's always repairing DNA strands, so we're very good at it. You know, when we exercise, we break some DNA strands. You know, free radicals break DNA strands, right? But there's a specific way we break them, which is very bad. You know, if we were to break both of them at the same time, or we were to really mess one up, like rip it all the way up, you know, or if we've got a particle sitting in the body that's so radioactive, it's just pinging like only 20 cells, you know. And so as they're trying to repair, the whole repair process is getting just pegged, you know. And so now, you know, what happens is the way they calculate biological effect of radiation on health is they average it kind of over tissue mass, you know. So they say, here's how much energy is absorbed. Here's the amount of mass, you know. So if we're talking about your skin, here's how many pounds of skin. Here's the amount of energy absorbed. And that's kind of how they dose, you know. But when it's inside of us, and it comes out, it can only hit about 20, 30 cells, you know, particle radiation, because it's charged, crashes into things. And now the denominator, which is the mass of these cells is minuscule, and the dose goes way up, you know, but nobody looks at that dose. You know, there was just in the, an article out of, an opinion out of, Oceanography Institute in California, right?
Yeah.
About radiation in California waters. And, you know, the experts said, hey, you know, it's only this many millisieverts. I wouldn't even worry about that because it's like going on a plane, you know. It's no big deal. Well, it's no big deal to swim in it. But if we continue to eat fish and stuff that comes into it and begins to affect that, well, now that's very different, you know, and people are sort of missing that nuance, if you will, you know. And there's some other ones, but not to beat it around too much, but that's kind of the point of the book, is to just highlight why it's a threat, why we still need to be very vigilant, what we're missing, you know, how scientists and doctors can actually get it wrong, you know. It's not a big conspiracy, you know. It's just kind of a natural progression of the way we thought about radiation, you know, always focusing on the stuff that came from the outside, on x-rays first, and then on nuclear blasts and stuff like this. And our biggest data set is about the atomic bomb blast survivors in Hiroshima, you know. And
yeah, like,
that's
our data.
So again, it's from outside, you know, and then there's some issues the way they did that. But
so really, it's the charge of nuclear power coming back as going, we're the safest alternative there is.
Right.
We're back into it. There's no worry about our plants.
Yep.
Trying to come back against the push of how bad it is, how waste, et cetera, and trying to really point out the science really behind all the bullshit or the fake news, if you will,
behind
that.
Yeah, that's the point, right? Yeah, trying to more nuanced view, you know. There is this subset, you know, and people talk about a lot of things. It becomes so academic, you know, reprocessing cycles. And we'll just clean the fuel up. We'll spin it around these different things. Well, the reprocessing sites we do have are extremely dirty because it's kind of a fantasy to believe you can work with this stuff and not release anything. So we've been trying to, like, work with it after the fact. Oh, cleaned
like,
up
for
this.
Who's signing
up
for that fucking job?
You know, the one in France is just a mess, you know. I mean, the shit all over the English Channel, all over the countryside, you know, because they reprocess there, you know, because it's dirty, inherently dirty. You can't contain this. There is no clean nuclear. It always releases tritium. It always releases other things, you know. And if you don't look at it correctly as something that's inside of you, I mean, you know, tritium molecule, you know, radioactive hydrogen, it can basically goes wherever water goes, right? It goes right down into hydrocarbon bonds and DNA if it wants to, you know. And so you have to think about it differently. And the big scam is that cancer, chemotherapy, I mean.
That was my next question.
Well, yeah, because cancer specialists already use radiation at the microdose level where, you know, you put radiation inside of you. It's very effective because it does. Well, if you plant it, right, it can only hit the cell next to it. It can only hit the tumor because it can't get past it the way it works a lot of these.
So it's not like they're putting it in you and this shit's just going to go all through you and they're rolling the dice.
It's going to, you know, it's going to knock around some free radicals for sure, you know, and maybe do some mess like that. But
and that's just a microdose.
But that's they have calculations for how to look at it at that level, and you need a very little amount to do a lot of big work, you know.
So over time, that small percentage exposure, wherever that may be on our body, has various effects of who could it be or what could it be or what the signs and symptoms are over time. But because it's so concentrated and the randomness of it, it is that important to take a look at, not just pulling the new curtain back on. Wait, we're still here, nuclear energy.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that's hitting our skin from the cosmos and the Earth is a very fundamentally different radiation. And so then here's this chart. Well, yeah, we get hit a lot, you know, living on Earth, right? You know, so here's this chart. Well, but that stuff's so small.
So they don't even pick it up. But
there's
it's
a lot of that
shit
out there. That
it's like that little fucking spider that just kills everything.
Right, of course. You know, if we really believe that invisible small things can't hurt us, you know, we know better now, right?
Yeah. Well, shit. Some of us,
right?
Wow, man. I mean, but we get looked at, right? It's again reforming or repackaging energy again. It's the lobbyists, these groups that back it. What it's for? You see all types of new media getting released.
Yeah.
Why this should be the choice? Why this shouldn't be the choice? Yeah. What direction do you think maybe we should look into for, you know, future energy?
You know, I think there's definitely something that we've yet to discover, right? You know, I mean, renewable green energies aren't going to solve everything. Obviously, you know, we use a lot of energy, you know, and we need really energy dense things, and nuclear is beautiful, right? And so I guess for me, it's just
so you're like pro nuclear, but pointing out all the fucking shit.
Well, yeah, and I'm not even pro nuclear. I would love to stop it all, but you have to get past it now. I mean, we have to store this waste for, call it 100,000 years. I mean, on just a small level, 10,000 years, right? Yeah. Well, that's maybe twice recorded human history, you know? So that's no small feat, you know? We're not even thinking about it. We're thinking about it, but we have no.
I saw a couple documentaries,
you know,
where they were just putting tarps underneath other tarps that they had buried.
It's terrible. I mean, sitting on top of nuclear reactors, you know, just waiting, overflowing, you know, just rods hanging out, you know, I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
Oh, wait, where shouldn't I live, man?
Well, pretty much anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, right? No.
Oh,
I'm dear.
not live? Just give me one place I should not live.
Fukushima.
Okay. Oh, good one. That's a soft way out, man. That's a good one.
That's a soft one.
We'll have some scares, right?
I guess, but, you know, there are a lot of nuclear, I mean, you know, there are a lot of nuclear facilities in the United States that are dangerous. You know, they're loaded with rods. They're old. The biggest fault line in the United States is in the middle of the country, the New Madrid fault line, that kind of is the Mississippi Valley, if you will, you know, St. Louis, all the way up, you know, when that ripped in the late 19th century. I mean, that's the biggest earthquake we've had, right? And there are a lot of nuclear facilities just hanging out there using the waters of that very water-rich region to cool these fires, right? And, you know, and so there's a lot of problems. You know, we haven't figured it out. Fukushima will leak forever. You know, I mean, robots are getting fried out trying to find the fuel. It's lost, right? It's right, I know. You know.
It is forever.
Well, I mean,
we're fucked.
Call it the next 50 years. You know, maybe one day here we'll go get it, but I doubt it. You know,
shit.
It's hard to do.
That's scary, man.
You know,
that's scary that we put more of that into practice. I mean, who really signs up for that job? Who goes in like, I'm the guy wearing the steel suit?
Nobody anymore. They send these robots down, right? And the robots get fried out before they can find out where this fuel is, you know. And then on top of that, you've got structurally compromised buildings still storing all the exposed, you know, the fuel rods, they spent fuel rods up there, you know, just, you know, waiting for issues, you know, I mean,
holy
just,
shit, man,
there's big threats around this, and people are just, because again, because we can do it, you know, the layman thinks, well, you got it all figured out, we're like masters of nuclear. Well,
the toddler in the kitchen,
we're really not.
I don't know why I
actually
keep thinking about it, the nine-year-old in the kitchen who's just like, open drawers, knives, blenders,
like, look what I can do, right? Yeah. I can turn the blender on, you
that's
know?
It
yeah and so that, you know, that's a big thrust of where I started this work, you know. It's not the most read book because not everybody wants to read about particle physics and something that maybe they can't do as much about. So I'm excited about trying to say more about wireless and the cell phone side of things, you know.
Yeah, well, you got to let me know. So they can get the nuclear book though right now, though,
yeah,
on Amazon.
Yeah, it's available.
All right, so I can read the nuclear book, or we can keep talking. I can get more from it.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah, so tell me, what else should we be worried about? What's something we can do? You talked about protecting, right? What's something that someone
can
do?
Yeah, I mean, there's some food strategies, right? You know, like the book says, start green. You know, it's the worst thing that radiation does inside the body for the most part is...
you know what? I blew you off course, man. You were about to talk about chemotherapy. And I totally squirreled.
No, not about chemo. I was talking about cancer therapy, but about how they use radiation for it, you know. Chemo is sort of the chemical way of doing it.
Yeah. I thought you were leading into something, and I squirreled you off about how the cancer treatments use it. You covered a little bit about that's why if you inject it close enough.
Yeah,
they have
real focused beam, focus, you know. Again, same amount of energy, just very small space. You know, that's sort of the dichotomy here that... they're missing in a lot of these arguments that...
that you don't see, right? You just see people say, no, chemo's bad, and then some people are like, that's what's killing you.
Yeah, and there's a lot of bad science reporting, you know, I think. And so the next one's kind of wireless side of things, You know,
that I'm interested in, man, because I may be not podcasting in a studio anymore. I got the closer I get to it with Jack Cruz's work now. I'm talking to you now more.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Jack Cruz. I found his site, you know, while I was researching my book, and you know, he's got it right. You know, I think. But you know, I'm pulling all the studies, you know, into this.
You're kind of doing the same thing with the book, is pulling everyone's research.
That's it. I mean, I want to say something for my audience, you know, and here's how to heal and protect, and you know, how do you do it? You know, what's the sane way of living with a phone? We almost have to have one,
right? Right.
Right. But what should we really be doing with them? You know, we really shouldn't be giving them to kids. You know,
good luck with that one.
Right. I know. You know, soft skulls, a lot of water in there. You know, attenuate a ton of radiation. So it's very.
And you're like the guy that studies this shit too, so you're not just the guy off.
You know, I mean, yeah, I'm trying, right? I'm trying to dig into it all. You know, I'm the guy who, in 2000, you know, most of my friends, you know, 2000, I was getting a cell phone, maybe late 90s or something. You know, I'm the one who didn't get one. You know, it hurt my head. You know, I said when I put it in my head,
and you
I was always
good
that
at math.
Yeah, right. I was always that whack. You know, I got a lot of flack from my friends over the year, but I've had an intuitive thing, you know, all my life that I don't jive with this. You know, I had to get one for work, the BlackBerry, you know, 2003, 4, 5. You know, I was typing away on the BlackBerry, you know, and I have a phone now.
What do you do now?
It's just a Samsung. Samsung's usually a lower radiation rated, you know, and then
I got some more secrets to get out of you. Do I gotta like wrap my house in like those X-ray blankets?
Well, you know, if you live near something, yeah, you should think about it.
Holy
know?
Shit, I was swinging in the dark.
Right,
I hit something.
I mean, some people believe so. I mean, not everybody's as sensitive, right?
I'm not rolling that dice with that 1%.
But you know, there are ways, right?
That's cool,
to
man.
To minimize and to think about it, and so you know, I'm still collecting a lot of that and trying to give the best information on some of these products too. You know that. That
so
can be
a
used.
List that the cancer causing list.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and I talk a lot in the book about the problem with cancer. You see, you know, science goes out there and they say, you know, we look for brain cancer in the statistical study, we didn't find any, so therefore the headline is cell phones don't cause cancer. You know,
right?
Well, that's kind of a misleading headline because you didn't actually find that. You just didn't find a statistical correlation in your little population. You know. And so early back as 2003, 2004, people used to send me these articles laughing, you know, like, ha, here's the real truth, you know, not the human truth or something, you know, and I read these articles and they would say, you know, 85% of the sample size have used cell phones less than 10 years, you know. And that's kind of where we are, you know, in the data. So
if I go and get 10 people and I make them eat my thing and some supplement I come up with and they all lose weight, even if just a pound, 70% weight loss. That's what you're going to, you know, 70% of people experience weight loss.
By that rule, cigarettes don't cause cancer, asbestos doesn't, there's no problem with lead, you know. I mean, very few things cause cancer in 5 to 10 years, you know. I mean, they have to be pretty nasty, like radioactive iodine, you know, right?
Man, I remember a time, at least when I was young, where I remember pointing out commercials going like false advertising. They don't really do
right?
that. That was like a thing at one point. I don't know what happened to that. Right. You can almost say anything right now on a commercial or what we do, our ad campaign.
Yeah.
You can just say whatever the fuck. Yeah, like no one's going like time out. Bullshit
just
here.
Just general news writing has gone down in that sense, too. I think technical side, you know, it's quantity. You know, it's getting a lot of opinions out there. And I think not everybody has it right.
It's hard, man. It's such
what science says and what you can say based on that, you know. And we're getting the data now. You know, that's kind of why the timing of this book is good, too. Even the National Toxicity Study came out in the U.S. last year.
That's in the book?
Yeah,
right,
definitely.
Cool. Tell me later because I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to know to see the most toxic places not to live because I'm moving in August. So I'm like, all right, where am I going on the map? May have to rule out like two right away. Oh, man.
Yeah.
So that book's already out. And the second one again?
Yeah. So what happened is I was kind of plunging right into the second one. And then I got into another project, another writing project that I started in August of last year. And I've been on. So I've put the second book down.
I went through that with like two of the books.
It's coming back to it here soon, but I had another project that had to go, you know, this corporate whistleblower current event thing, you know, I can't say too much, but it'll be good, you know, so I'm almost finishing that and then it's back into.
What's the second one about again? What's the answer to it, right? We talked about 4G, 5G.
That's definitely what I'm throwing.
Because, well, 5G is
the risk
now,
hazard
right?
on. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's too soon, you know, 2019, you know, 2020, we'll see. You know, we're still obviously putting out 4G, 5G will cost a lot more money.
Mm.
You know, I think, you know, terabyte a second is what we want. We're going to push, you know, the frequencies higher. And that's where the controversy now is even more, you know, as you push frequencies higher, towers have to be closer together, you know, for the data fidelity, you know. So more towers, higher frequencies, you know, frequencies that interact with, we know now, sweat ducts in the body, which are helical, so they attenuate a little bit. Some research just
kind of. I'm sweating all the time.
Right, maybe, right? You know, it picks up a lot. And so, you know, and that's what I talk about a little bit, is just understanding the biological influence of.
Fucking makes logical sense to me. The way you're talking, I'm like, yeah, I'm surrounded by more and more of these devices that are sending, you know, now, what type of rays? Educate me here. So we're
electromagnetic radiation.
Electromagnetic radiation that we're living around all the time, essentially. Right, and they've already proven it has a certain biological effect on us, right?
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, as we get into these newer cell phone frequencies, you know, 2000 and beyond, you know, now we're really getting much closer. I mean, microwaves heat water, right?
That's where I was going to go. You know, I was going to say, I was trying not to sound
energy's,
stupid.
You know, energy's different and stuff like this, but, you know, so if you go to, like, you know, the government websites and you ask them, do cell phones cause cancer? They'll all say, no, you know. Our latest understanding is there's no known mechanism for how they could, because it's non-ionizing, you know. So since it can't rip an electron away, then therefore there's no known mechanism. That's what all the government websites will say, you know, they can't step on industry's feet, you know. And yet here are all these studies showing that, you know, put a cell phone up to your head and then in the salivary area, there's a bunch of free radicals, you know, oxidative stress after using it, study after study. So while there's
what's a free
no
radical?
Mechanism, a free radical is most typically, it could be what's called a hydroxyl free radical, OH.
Yeah, okay.
You know, free radical happens when something comes in, say, strips an electron off of an atom, you know, so just take water. If it's H2O and it comes in and it strips it off, you know, and you sort of get this, now you get OH, and you get this other fragment, you know, and now OH is thirsty because it's missing electrons. So it wants to go find one from anywhere, right? And so when it bumps into something, it rips one from there. Well, now that tissue gets damaged in a sense, you know, so... So free radicals damage biological tissue through this sort of energetic electron swapping, right? And so, you know,
which we do just by touching things, bumping into things, people, etc.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, like, just go back to ionizing radiation, you know, it can easily rip, an electron. So it does, you know, and
from multiple things.
So
in the
free
air,
radicals, people. One of the ways you heal is you focus on antioxidants, right? And things that boost your body's natural source of antioxidants, which is glutathione. You know, glutathione is the body's antioxidant. It's the one you want to like maximize to live a long, healthy, productive life with a good mind, you know? And so, because radiation creates free radicals. So here, and we know free radicals create cancer, you know, that's a mode because it can damage DNA. It can damage, these things. So oxidative stress can lead to not just cancer, but a host of health issues, deteriorating health issues, you know, in the eyes, in the heart, cardiovascular system, whatever, you know.
Because cancer is simply what? Aging disease, right? Like you die of a
yeah, I mean, you've got an aberrant cell that's you know,
it's not
mutant
growing
and
anymore.
It's multiplying, you know, and it's taking over the rest, you know. Mm. Because the code's been damaged, you know, and this one's fine. But this, you know, and that's kind of the thing I talk about a lot in the book, you know, not to just get too technically crazy here, you know, but in a sense, you know, all these statistical studies, they all try to ask the question, does one thing cause one thing? You know, does a cell phone cause cancer? You know, and yet, you know, if it just caused free radicals, that with other things, you know, might be the statistical place, you know, and so I think that's what we miss sometimes is that, yeah, there's no known mechanism, and yet here's this free radical burden, here are these studies showing hearing loss or a lot of studies showing a lot of things, you know, affecting sleep and the things that we should be watching. You know, I say the problem with cancer is they always want to make the debate about cancer, you know. It's the same thing with radiation. Does it cause cancer? Well, ionizing radiation causes all sorts of health problems, you know, not just cancer.
So how about does it do damage?
That's right. I mean, in the business world, cancer is like the most lagging indicator you could pick. It'd be like a business, you know, measuring or bankrupt, you know, check. You know, yeah. Well, they should have been looking at something way back here, you know, like annual revenue at least or something, you
right,
know.
Yeah.
Get a little health of your business, right? And so, you know, the debate, because we want to just press forward and ignore this health, is always, does it cause cancer? You know, cell phones, we look at the most rare cancer. Does it cause brain cancer? You know, well, got a very small subset, you know, so we can't find it. Statistically, we say...
And if we can spend money to make sure it says that, then we can keep
right,
doing what we're doing.
Right, you can design bad studies, and so, you know, there's a professor...
Well, you asked the wrong question, right? Does cell phone cause brain damage? So let's do that study there. We've proven it, and then people now have, you know, all this research, and that's the science, if you will, the bought and paid for peer study reviews. They get duplicated. I mean, even the idea of true science is cloudy these days.
I mean, there's the Dr. Henry Lay... I don't know if I'm saying his last name right, professor, researcher in Washington State. And he's done, you know, a good compilation on cell phone studies, right?
Yeah.
And you know, by his research, if you look at industry-funded, it's sort of like 20% show some harm and 80% don't. If you look at non-industry funded, it's the very opposite. 80% show some kind of biological issue.
Even the
20% don't, right?
That scares the shit out of me by itself.
Right.
So even the phone industry is willing to say at least 20% of you are getting fucked up.
Well, they all have the very big warnings on their things saying, you know, you probably shouldn't put this next to your head because they're already getting ready for the liability. In fact, you know, there's some humorous stuff.
Addicts are we, man.
Right? These insurance policies don't cover you from EM. They're already getting ready. They're kind of putting it out there, you know, and in their very own sort of...
everything's come loose.
Profit loss statements by these companies, they say, you know, we can't say that we won't get sued in the future. So
they're already budgeting.
Even our projections could be hit by this if we were to get turned and the science were to go the other way, right? And so obviously, you know, wherever there's big money.
Find the slush fund,
stuff,
people. That's
right?
What they're saying. Find the slush fund for the 20% they're going to sue us.
Who's going to get the liability, you know, on this one?
Fuck.
So, I think that, you know, we're just going too fast with it, especially with kids. You know, we forget that, I mean, what, the iPhone 3 came out in like 2004 or something, you know, and
this is less than a decade ago,
you know, and now we're just doing everything on our phone. I mean, you know, and some of these studies, I mean, the National Toxicity Study Program the U.S. government did on rats showing cancers was on 2G. Because it took so long to get the funding, it took them 10 years to finish the study.
Because it goes against industry.
We're already on to 4G, you know, and so...
What was the numbers? On 2G?
Oh, cancer causing. You know, they haven't put out the full study yet. You know, they kind of put out a brief in 2016. They're kind of tabulating
well, thanks.
The final
we get a
thing.
Fucking brief in 2016
right,
or something that we've been living
right.
in for 10, 20, 12
it was like
years.
Male rats particularly, gliomas, schwannomas, you know, cancers of some of these tissues that surround our nerves and stuff like that, you know. And
fuck, I got to find a new way to do a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways.
I'm killing myself
you know?
In here, man. Jack so, Cruz, yeah, we're both dying together at least, man. So, my gosh, man. So you're
you know,
working
there are giants
one.
Out there, right, you know, and so it's like on the all radiation, there are these giants, you know, that that do this good work, you know, and so for me, it's about saying it, my own voice, trying to put my own way of living life with these threats and just to
but
get
then
this info out
I like,
there, you know?
I like how you're not enforcing either side, though. You're not enforcing the no nuclear all the way side. You're arguing literally both points.
Yeah, I think we just have to be smarter, you know. What we know. I mean, if it's hurting people, which it is... then do it better. You know, there's Li-Fi. There, you know, there's light fidelity, right? Instead of using wireless signals, use light, you know? I mean, there's some benefits there. There's some limitations, you know? There's other technologies. There's other ways of doing this, you know, that if we lie to ourselves, especially about nuclear radiation. I mean, for me, all my work right now is I want to get out onto my soapbox and talk about a few of these things, right? You know? But to me, the common theme is this humanity that is this DNA, right? You know, this all my studies, inner, outer space, you know, just magnificent miracle, you know, DNA and life. And this is all possible because of it, you know, and nothing mutates it better than nuclear radiation. Nothing, you know. That's its speciality. Life evolved to get ionizing radiation protected from, you know, and it doesn't exist without, you know, some of the things we've learned. And, you know, and there's a thought leader, a great woman who's been the anti-nuclear advocate forever, Dr. Helen Caldicott. You know, her work very much influences mine. And she says something in her book that just terrified me. You know, there's a Dr. Muller who won a Nobel Peace Prize for doing radiation on fruit fly experiments, right? And zap some fruit flies radiation, you know, follow all the kids and their ancestors down the line, you know, and see. And he found it can take 30, 40, 50 generations for mutations to manifest physically, you know. Wow. And so, you know, we've been 2, 3, 4 generations since the nuclear era started here, you know. And I think we've already done damage to ourselves, to our genes. You know, we won't know, right? Because we were already littering the biosphere with the stuff before we ever mapped the genome, right? So we didn't even know everything about DNA before we started the work, you know. So that now Pandora's box is out. Everybody's got all this stuff in us. We're born with it. The whole world, you know, is born with radiation in our body, you know. You know, I think there's some, it pisses me off, and, you know, I think there's work we have to do, you know, to tell the truth about, you know, the threat, right?
That's what I call a cognitive rampage. Right,
that's
right
a little
there.
Rampage right there.
That's it, man. You went the fuck off.
Right.
Man.
So that's my work, you know.
Well, I was doing okay until I had this guy, Dave Schumann, on my podcast. He scared the shit out of me about nuclear. We need another place, another something. No, I'm just kidding, man. That's information people
I mean, there are things we can
know.
Do. You know, that's the point of the book, right, is that it's not all bad news. Right?
Yeah.
You know, the body's amazing. You know, it heals itself. We repair DNA all the time. Medicine, ceremony, medicine work works at the DNA, works at the genetic level, does work there. You know, I'm not going to point to studies. This is my own personal knowings, right? And that's the work we need to do, right? I
mean, you're another one of those bridges, man. The bridges.
I hope
between,
so, right?
That's what I see. The more of the bridge between the science and the spiritual, the ones that can. I mean, you fully understand at a molecular level all this stuff that's happening.
Well, I'm trying to.
Oh, you're getting there, right? You're taking that, then combining it, and showing almost from science research over time how much this does affect. You're like one of those extractors too, man.
One of those
bridges crossing us to some place that we're still trying to figure out.
Yeah, like a guide, you know, right? It's like, you know, I don't know what's over the rise, right? But I know we probably shouldn't walk that way, right? You know,
like I'll go
right. Maybe this way. I could be wrong, and I could go backtrack, and I don't mind backtracking and being wrong, you know. But something's so important, you know. And then when I work with the medicine, I get this overwhelming call, you know, from this intelligence, whatever you want to call it, this spiritual connection, to say this is where you got to go do some work. And
yeah.
So when I come back sort of charged, I'm like, okay, I got to find a way to make my life work, right? I got to pay the bills. I got to do this growth and service work here, you know. I got to take care of the kid, right, and family. And
maybe you just don't have to do anything.
Right, yeah, that's the contentment, right?
Right, maybe, or complacency, right?
Right.
That's that fucking vague, I love how it comes full circle. That's the full synergy, right? It comes all the way back.
Synergy, there you go.
How we started, man, is the idea of chasing the competence, take us further into the disarray.
I mean, effortless until it's, you know, effort until it's effortless, you know. I heard someone say recently, you know, and for me it's just putting a lot of energy into it right now, you know.
Well, I'm glad somebody is, man.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm late. I'm trying. You know, that's it. You know,
I'm glad somebody is, man, because, I mean, I can't write about that. But that stuff you're putting out there, that's the stuff I like to read and hear about. Will you, like, continue to come on, man? I'd love to keep.
I'd love to.
I still got a lot to learn from you, man. I just had, like, lesson 101 of an intro into it. My brain started.
Well, and I talk scattery, so, you know, we're trying to make this coherent here, you know.
No, man, this is a cognitive rampage. There's nothing coherent going on in this fucking.
Less coherent, better, right?
Exactly. People listen to this thinking just like you, too. Then they hear a couple sentences, and their brain is starting to go, oh, shit, they're going this way. I meanwhile, I'm trying to go, oh, my brain snaps into three different directions when you're talk, and then I'm like, oh, I gotta talk.
Right. Yeah.
Man, I want to keep chatting, man. I do got to get up out of here, though, man.
But no problem.
Where do people find you, the work, the book, recap all that shit?
Well, my site right now is livingwithradiation.com, and that's where my book is, and contact for me, anything along those lines.
Dave, what's the website?
Livingwithradiation.com.
Yeah. Look you up under Dave Schumann.
Too. Yeah, yeah. David Thomas Schumann. Had to go for the author, the triple name, you know.
Right? So it'd be what, David T. Schumann?
Yeah, David T.
Yeah, I like the David T.
Yeah, I like David Thomas. You know, he's like the beloved doubter, right?
That's funny, man, because I like my, I use Adam Brett as my first and middle.
Okay.
I'm like, I always like that a little better sometimes, right? But I can't use the B because altogether it looks like Adam Blowery.
Right, yeah. No, I can't work that, no.
It's terrible, man.
Yeah, I know how it goes.
So Amazon, man, get the book. It's called.
Yeah, Amazon. It's called Living with Radiation, Heal and Protect, A Nuclear World.
Oh, man, I'm going to pick that thing up, dude, and you'll come back and do this again before I leave. I'm out probably in August.
Yeah, we should do a reconnect, and yeah, we can go somewhere else.
Oh, I love it, dude. Thanks for coming on, man.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, brother.
So how was it? Did you like it? Did you love it? Let us know. Go to thecognitiverampage.com. Feel free to contribute, donate, keep fueling the change, whatever it is that you guys can do to help continue to allow this to happen. None of this would happen without you and your love and your support. And of course, your contributions. Love you.